You're listening to the Love Yegg Show. If our city could talk, these are the stories it would tell about the people, places, and passion in Edmonton. We interview difference makers in our community. Please welcome your hosts, Sherry Beauchamp and Jesse McCracken.
All right. Welcome to the Love Yegg podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Jesse McCracken.
Hello.
Today, we have a very special guest with us. His name is Jason Shine.
So Jason is a real estate agent at our brokerage, and he's been with us for about 8 or 9 months. And Jason gives back more than anybody I know. Every opportunity that I've seen for him to put himself out there and help other people, he has. And actually, he won our humanitarian award again, because I haven't seen somebody who gives so much of themselves to other people. And that's just something that obviously is really admirable. And I guess I'm really interested to know, like, where that came from.
Great.
Well, that's a wonderful introduction.
I already proved I couldn't do better myself. So. I guess my motivation for giving back is twofold. One part of it is from my religious beliefs, and the second part is just from my experience. So I'll speak to both. My religious beliefs, I'm a Christian, and what that means for me is that I think that every person is part of God's family, and that we're all God's children. And as children of a king, every person is worthy of respect and decency and being treated decent. It doesn't matter to me if other people don't agree with that spiritual belief, because that doesn't affect whether or not I think that about them.
Right.
And I've not met anybody who's like, no, don't treat me decently. Don't treat me like a prince or princess. I don't want that. Everybody wants that, right? I want that. Everybody I know wants that on some level. And so that's what I offer people primarily. And so I don't find that to be very controversial at all, even though there's lots of people I well understand don't agree with my perspective on spiritual things. But that doesn't slow me down any from treating them well. And that usually is very warmly received. The second part is from my personal experience. I grew up poor in a poor family, and I've been both relatively wealthy and relatively poor. And I have friends who are much wealthier than I am. I have friends that are much poorer than I am. And I found that overall, people are just people. There are good people in every socioeconomic strata. There are bad people in every socioeconomic strata. A lot of where you are in the levels that our society marks as success has more to do with luck and timing and opportunity and family upbringing than it has to do with worth or skill or value. And so I treat everybody like they have value, no matter where they're at. And again, that's very warmly received. It also is, it's really important to me to be able to offer that, to people, who don't normally have that experience, because I grew up, without some of those opportunities, and know lots of people in my own family who haven't experienced the opportunity to have some of the experiences I've had. So I want to offer them the best I possibly can every time I get the opportunity to.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. Honestly, there is, every time I look at anything that you're doing, and even when you're not the kind of person that's doing it for people to see you, you're just living it every single day. And that's something that I'm like, oh, I wish I could be more like Jason. And I just don't know where you find the time.
There is a time challenge, obviously. And so one of the ways that maximizes the time is that I have the great gift of my family is there with me. Ideologically, they're there with me.
So, I love that.
So my 8-year-old, I guess probably because that's all she's ever seen, is just into it. My wife is very excited about it and serves alongside me. And so it's not like,
how do I
find time for my family? They're there helping, you know, we're in the kitchen together, peeling potatoes together. And so it's not like I have to sacrifice. You don't have to sacrifice time with your family to give if they're there with you. Mm-hmm. And so that that's a big part of the answer, is where do I find the time? Well, in part because you're freed up to give in a very different way if your family's in it with you instead of you doing it without them. Mm-hmm. If you can convince them to come alongside, and it didn't take a lot of convincing in my part. Both my wife and daughter are better people than I am by far, but
I met your wife. She's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she's pretty amazing. You have to be pretty charitable to put up with me for 20 years. And so, her name's Carissa, and she just lives up to her name. That her name literally means charitable, and wow. She is. And so, yeah, that helps with the time part. But yeah, it is. There is a challenge. There are times when you have to make difficult calls between furthering your own interests and furthering.
Yeah.
The interests of community, and you have to find a balance that works for you. You also have to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. It doesn't serve you or anybody else well to give beyond your capacity. Eventually you will reveal that you're beyond your capacity, and that I've personally had that experience where mm-hmm. I got myself there.
Yeah.
It's not pretty, and it's not helpful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't benefit anybody. If you kind of lose your mind halfway through preparing a meal for people, and then hungry people show up and you're like crying in the corner, that's not my personal stress release, but I've seen that happen to people. And, you know, unless there's somebody there to pick up your mess, nobody's going to eat that night. The hungry people are going to stay hungry, and you're going to be a mess for maybe weeks or months from that breakdown. And so it doesn't do you well to right. go beyond your capacity. I think most people err on the side of protecting their own interests too much, but you do need to take care of yourself first. Mm-hmm. If you're not taking care of, there's no point in trying to take care of somebody else. You can't.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of these things that you are doing in the community. So I know you're very much involved in feeding.
I love hungry. Food. That's always part of my passion, and it is obviously it's one of those most basic needs. If people aren't fed,
right.
then they can't do anything else, right? If you haven't eaten well,
yep.
And more than just food, I think that a well prepared meal can communicate three things at the same time. So it does feed, and that's very important. That's a really basic thing, and you have to do that. Mm-hmm. But a well prepared meal for very low cost can also be very nutritious. And so it communicates something to their bodies beyond just they're full. It also gives them nutrients. And for a very low cost, you can give somebody a McDonald's hamburger.
Right.
But if they've had three of those already today, another one isn't really what they need. They need something with a little bit more nutritional fullness and balance to it. And so preparing a well-prepared meal that has some nutritional thought behind it and some science behind it can, I think, fulfill them in a different way than just filling their stomachs, but actually filling their nutritional needs in a fuller way. And then the community that's created around a shared table
right.
is such a gift to give people. So there's a famous guy that does this extremely well. He's maybe literally the best chef on the planet. So that's a big bonus. His name is Massimo Bottura, and he and his wife started a thing called Food for Soul in Italy. He really is one of the highest ranked Michelin chefs on earth year after year after year. And they run in their own spare time. They run a feeding program, a soup kitchen, essentially, but a soup kitchen where people are fed gourmet meals.
Wow.
And I don't achieve his level of cooking excellence. And I'm not a world famous chef, but he's the standard that I'm always reaching for. And they try to communicate the dignity and beauty of every person mm-hmm. in every meal they serve. So I strive to do the same in my somewhat ham-handed compared to his skill way, but that's what we're trying to do every time I feed. So I primarily feed people right now through a thing called Prayer Works, which is at a church. An Anglican church near Alberta Avenue, and Prayer Works, same motivation behind the whole team there. They're trying to communicate dignity and worth and value and real nutritional balanced meals. The priest there doesn't regularly participate in the kitchen, But if you try to cut corners and not serve a salad with your entree, even if your entree is packed full of vegetables, he comes and it's like, why is there no salad? We need a salad. Change this menu. We have to. And then he's out again. Cause he, like I said, he's not really a cook, but he knows he wants to see. He's just like, no, it communicates something different if we serve this in three courses. And this is the best meal these people might eat all week. We want to make sure it's the best meal these people eat all week.
That's amazing.
Wow, honestly, I want to eat some of those meals.
It's like attention to detail, right? Right? It's like anything in life, right?
Yes.
So are you guys doing that daily or is that?
So PrayerWorks only operates on Friday nights as far as the dinner. They do Thursday lunches and I'm in charge of the soup preparation for those lunches. It's usually a soup and sandwich. So we make sure that we do a full and rich and beautiful soup. Soups are really easy to do once you know the basic things. You put in a mirepoix and a roux, and those are fancy French words for a mixture of vegetables to make it taste good and be nutritious, and a thickening combination of butter and flour that makes it rich and creamy and delicious. And what makes a thick soup so much more satisfying than just a broth. And so I'm in charge of the soups for Thursdays, but when I do a soup cook, it's hundreds of servings. And then we only have to do that about once a month. But then those are warmed up and served in subsequent weeks. And they kind of mix and match the soup so that people don't get the same thing every week.
Think of the intention that goes in behind, like the preparation of food. That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. And do you do the soups at home or do you work from their kitchen?
I work in their kitchen only for food safety reasons.
Yeah.
I have pets. And so some people are going to have so it's just much easier. Plus their kitchen's bigger. I'm making soup for 500 servings sometimes. So they have two large gas stoves with six burners each and they have, I have one 50 cup stock pot in my house because I have a limited sized bungalow that I live in but they have eight. Right. So you can just make more soup in that kitchen than I can make at my house.
Yeah.
And then on Friday nights is the dinner. And then Saturdays they do breakfast. Friday night dinners I cook for about once a month, sometimes twice a month. And the Saturday breakfast I've really not had anything to do with. I know they do that, but.
And how did you get involved with this specific church?
I was telling my friends that I had a dream of starting a Food for Soul in Edmonton, still a dream of mine someday to maybe see that happen. They have a category on their website of people that are sort of local champions of the idea who aren't necessarily, if real Food for Soul was to start, we would hire real chefs to do it. And I wouldn't qualify to be in the kitchen. I would just be the cheerleader in the background going, go, guys, go, make it beautiful. And it would be food that I couldn't produce. And that would be a wonderful thing. That's a dream, to have the food be so good that I couldn't outdo it would be amazing. But I was telling a friend about that dream. And she said, oh, you need to talk to this guy. And I already knew that gentleman. His name's Kevin Jagger. He works at a Mennonite church in town. And so I had a coffee with Kevin. And Kevin was like, well, you need to talk to the people at PrayerWorks because they're already kind of doing that. And it may not be everything you want it to be, but it would scratch some of where you itch already. And so I did. And it did. And I started helping with them. That just started this fall.
Yeah.
Before that, I was doing it at a church that no longer does a meal program. So,
so you mentioned a little bit about this comes from how you grew up and that kind of thing. So can you just talk a little bit about that and how maybe that's translated through what you're doing now?
Yeah. So some of this passion comes from watching it happen other ways. So I love that Hope Mission feeds people and they primarily focus on filling the stomach just because that's such a pressing need. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I used to volunteer with them from time to time. And I would even lead groups there when I worked with students. I would take students there all the time. And one of the times I took a group of students there, but nothing made that sort of assembly line kind of food line feeding of people seem more foreign than the time that I scooped some mashed potatoes onto a plate. And the person on the other side said, Jason. And I looked up and it was my cousin and my cousin, Mike, who I knew was sometimes on the street in Edmonton. he struggles with addictions, and there he was standing, and nothing made that counter. And the sort of, I'm the staff on this side, even though we were volunteers protected by this wall, and you are the recipients on that side. Well, suddenly this counter felt really foreign and really horrible. And I quickly went around the door and hugged my cousin and went and sat down with him and ate the meal, and somebody else can scoop the potato. You know, I had 8 students there with less than they needed to do anyway. It was just like, you guys are in charge of this now. And I sat with my cousin, but it nothing makes that feel more foreign than when you realize, what is this wall doing? You know, this is because I ate meals with him at Christmas and at family celebrations for a decade with us sitting across from each other at the same table. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't we be doing that now? Just because his luck hasn't been as good as mine. Some of his decisions have turned out far worse, but that's, you know, one bad decision away from happening to anybody.
I believe it.
And, yeah. And so that's what took me beyond that experience, is what sparked me beyond. It's good to just, I used to just volunteer from time to time just to feed people. And that's where the dream started for me of, no, we need to do something far more. And then it was a couple of years later when I was watching a silly thing on Netflix just to kill time one afternoon and saw, oh, there's this guy. I saw a documentary about Chef Massimo and I watched it, and oh, that is the thing I've been looking for. Somebody is doing it. I didn't even know it existed.
That's so cool.
Wow.
It's really cool. So, you know that we're like obviously Edmonton based, and we're showcasing incredible people like yourself that are doing things in our city. Tell us about, what do you love about Edmonton?
Well, Edmonton's fabulous.
Especially today.
I love Edmonton. It is cold sometimes, but I love Edmonton. I guess the first thing that really made my wife and I fall in love with Edmonton is we're from Toronto. Well, I'm from small town Saskatchewan originally, but I lived in Toronto for a decade. My wife grew up in Toronto, and we were in Toronto. And when we moved to Edmonton, one of the things that shocked us is that we could easily, in fact, some ways it was cheaper to afford places right in the core of the city, mm-hmm. and be walking distance to all these amazing attractions and things. And you could live right there for less than you could live in the suburbs, where you had to drive to everything other than a Walmart worth doing. Mm-hmm. Right. And that was a shock to us, because that's not true in Toronto and other cities. The closer you get to the core, the more expensive you can't get a parking spot for the price of a condo in downtown Edmonton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so it was a real gift to us to be able to live in the core, and that the people that we met in the neighborhoods that we've lived in the core of Edmonton has been an amazing gift of Edmonton, because it's an incredibly diverse mm-hmm. group of people that find themselves in that place. People from other parts of the world and other parts of the country who would never be able to live downtown and are just so excited about living downtown. And so we had neighbors right next to us who were McEwen professors, and we had neighbors right next to us transitioning out of homelessness, and we had neighbors right next to us who were brand new to Canada from every part of the world. We had neighbors who spoke Mandarin in their home, and neighbors who spoke Farsi in their home, and neighbors who spoke Amharic in their home, and ate all the foods, you just kind of, as you get to know your neighbors, you get to know their food and their culture and their language. And so what a gift to be able to experience all of that automatically, and to be able to do that at a discount seems pretty amazing to me. And I think that's one of the values that Edmonton presents to people that people just miss out on, because so many Edmontonians think the dream is to get away from all of that, because it is a little bit chaotic and noisy and messy. Not everything is perfect about it, but if you see it as an opportunity, it's a huge gift as well.
Oh, and the community, right? The community that you've created just with all of the people that are in your neighborhood is amazing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So as a part of, this was kind of a spinoff of Legacy Yag, what we were doing as building a community there as well. So a huge part of that is, you know, how do you want to be remembered? What is your legacy? What do you want to, you mentioned you have kids, right? So what do you want to pass on to them? That kind of thing.
Well, just one kid, just to be clear.
One kid. Yes. Yes. Pardon me.
I don't want to start any rumors. who knows how big this thing will go on the internet. I don't get in trouble. Anyway,
And his humor is really great too. Yes. I can always count on Jason for some good laughs.
So legacy, I don't know about legacy. I think of it more as impact. Legacy to me is about what people say about you once you're dead. And I think one of the things I've learned is I have no control over that. You know, how people will frame the story, even how people speak of me now when I'm out of the room, I'm not in charge of that. And some of them are going to be extremely charitable towards me. And some of the smartest people I know say some of the nicest things about me. And I'm amazed by the things they say about me. And other people I know who are also quite intelligent and quite wonderful people in their own right, I've heard from friends occasionally say nasty things about, like they tell the story about the worst moment that I ever had, the most embarrassing thing that I ever had. I was introduced as a guest speaker once at a church by a story about a friend of mine where I'd spilled something on myself and it looked like I'd peed my pants. And that's how he chose to enter. And then I stood up in front of 200 people to try to speak to them for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's a tough thing to follow, no, right? No. You never know what someone else is going to say about you. And that's really what legacy is to a certain extent. But impact is something you control because that's in the here and now. And so for me,
it's beautiful.
I try to shape the best impact I can. Legacy will have to take care of itself. And sometimes some people's legacies are amazing and other people who have also tried to have a very positive impact, one bad story gets told about them and their impact is negated or their legacy is negated. But your impact on the lives around you right now, nobody gets to shape that for you. You get to do that yourself. And so I focus on that. I think try to be positive. You know, you were asking about Edmonton earlier. I have to brag about some of my Edmonton friends too. One of the most amazing, another amazing thing about Edmonton is, I don't know if you guys know, but we're the first international location of this idea called November Project, which is just a free fitness community. And there are people, this morning, there were people running up and down Walterdale Hill in the minus 30 temperatures for free together, cheering each other on, encouraging each other to keep running uphill, even though that's difficult. And there are people there that are really amazing athletes who are burning up and down that hill a dozen times in a half hour. And there are people that are walking slowly, some of them in their 90s, literally walking up and down, and maybe they make it 1.5 times up the hill in their half hour, and everybody's embraced. And that's just part of that November Project mood. So there's just so many amazing things about Edmonton, and you go there and you cheer people on and you're having an impact on each other and on yourself and on your fitness. And whether or not, you know, anybody remembers me as an athlete, well, that's extremely unlikely, right? But I can go to November Project and make an impact on the other people around me who are inspired by seeing my fat butt go up and down the hill, and they can inspire me, and we can have an impact on each other's lives and improve each other's lives, even though none of us will probably be remembered as athletes. So that sort of speaks to that legacy impact thing.
I love it. I love it.
Oh my gosh. Honestly, you made me cry. I'm a little sick today, so I'm just sitting back, but I'm like, everything you're saying, I'm like, yes, yes. It's amazing, really.
Yeah. I think, you know, even just sitting here now, we're asking you direct questions and you can even tell that he's putting other people first, you know,
yeah.
Like he kind of spins it back around to another group. I think you're a really superhuman being, and we thank you so much for taking some time with us here today.
Yeah.
And, you know, last time I saw you, you were dressed up as Santa Claus, and now, you know, you're just so involved in the community and doing all these fun things. So we really appreciate taking the time out to be with us today.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't get called superhuman near enough.
Well, you twice today, superhuman.
And we would love to see, you know, the Soul Kitchen here in Edmonton. I think that'd be really, really cool. So yeah, that's amazing.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you were inspired by our show, please take a moment to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen and share with friends. You can always find show notes at loveyegshow.ca. Keep listening.